Well, I'm gonna put this up on ANC report. Shit, Pepe Escobar and I have been talking about the South Stream line for a long time, but so have you. So I wanted to get your two cents about it, about what's going on there. First, tell people what is the South Stream, and then answer the question what you think about it.
Okay, cool. Right. Well, basically, a couple years ago, Russia announced that it was going to be doing a project, having a pipeline go from the Black Sea port area in Russia, and then, you know, cut through the Black Sea, and then go and then enter into Bulgaria, and that part's going to like play in real significantly in a moment. And it was going to go through Bulgaria and then through Serbia, and then there was different plans from there, but most plans had it. One could cut across Serbia through the Adriatic to Italy, the south of Italy, and then, but primarily it was going to go north through Serbia and then maybe include or exclude Croatia, definitely include Slovenia, Hungary, Austria, and then wind around through Italy that way too. And basically a lot of the project companies were European, so the Russians were bringing in European companies.
Well, a couple of important points there is, one, it doesn't go through Ukraine like almost all the other pipelines.
Right.
And also, explain why this is a gas pipeline, right?
Yeah, natural gas pipeline.
Right. Why are pipelines so important?
Okay, well, it's the economics.
I'm going real basic, but it's, trying to make
Sure. Like, well, it's real important because you can extract gas at a certain location, but then if you're just going to like fill it with like tankers that are going to go on five wheelers, and then you're going to use roads, you know, the costs outweigh the benefit, right? So it's a real simple cost benefit. So if you build infrastructure like pipelines, then you deliver it over time. Once you pay back the cost of the infrastructural investment, then it's going to be way more cost effective than putting it on trucks, hiring drivers, paying the tolls on the roads and the gas for the trucks and the purchasing and maintaining the trucks.
And so it's slow, and there's a lot of bad winters in the area, and so the pipeline is any day, anytime, all the time.
Right. They can run cleaners and preservatives through the pipelines, which they often do. And yeah, trucks can get stopped. There's really bad winters. People know, like, Russia, Ukraine are famous for them. So there you go.
Okay. And then I guess when they go to Italy also, they hit ports, and then they can be shipped all over the world.
Exactly. Okay. And another thing with the pipelines is that it's, you know, there's economics involved, but then there's like these long-term thinking, geostrategic things, because pipelines tend to bring countries together, and they tend to make it difficult to break countries apart without turning it into like a civil war or some, you know, crazy situation like we see in Ukraine.
All right. Yeah. All right. Good points. Okay. So there is the North Stream line, and to be made, and the South Stream line, which should be finished next year, 2015, right?
Right, right. Now, basically, where it is now,
which I guess
that,
is in a month.
yeah. I mean, that was the scheduled, you know, time for a lot of the pieces to come together. Different pieces of South Stream have already been constructed, and a lot of the stuff has been built in the Black Sea already. And then things have been built in the north of Serbia instead of the south, which is really, really interesting. It actually kind of foreshadows some ideas about what people could have known about future problems that just happened recently. And then, there was Nord Stream, which accounted for like 25 and 35% of Russia's natural gas to Europe. And then like most of the balance of that was through the two lines going through Ukraine, the Union or Soyuz line, and then the Brotherhood line branched out of that.
Ukraine's been having some problems, I heard.
Yeah, well, right. Well, we know, of course, about the civil war in Ukraine after the U.S. staged the coup at the end of last year. But, you know, the problems with the gas have been going on for a couple years, and basically Ukraine's been...
Wait, you mean that Upstart wasn't organic, that the National Endowment for Democracy funneled tens of millions of dollars into? You mean that wasn't authentic?
You know, apparently, I know, it surprised me too, because I had just assumed that Soros was a, you know, native citizen of Ukraine because he's so involved in the politics there. But yeah, apparently Kagan and Nuland are not Ukrainian citizens. And so when they, you know, put, you know, dollars that the Federal Reserve magically printed from thin air to undermine and overthrow foreign governments.
Wait, are you calling the Kagan family liars?
Hey, you didn't hear it from me. Yeah, no, so that's, you know, but with the pipelines, right, the thing is that Europeans were actually on board with the South Stream project, and sort of some of the intrigues that had developed were around, you know, without really belaboring the point, is that in the Caucasus, there's a couple of countries like Armenia and Georgia and Azerbaijan. And after the collapse of the Soviet Union, they've had some mutual antagonisms and stuff. And the Turks have played a role in kind of triangulating there. The Europeans have, and the Russians have. Anyway, in the Caspian Sea, there's a small to decent, but decent sized reserve that hasn't really been fully exploited. And
well, it's important though, because it's non-OPEC gas and oil.
Exactly. And these are called the Shah-Dennis Consortium fields. And they planned an expansion called Shah-Dennis 2. But that's details. The point is that what happened is, before South Stream was announced, the Americans, working with the Turks and with the Israelis, wanted to build, and the Azeris, wanted to build a complex pipeline called the Nabucco line, and that was going to basically bring Palestinian gas, because it's off the shore of Gaza, and it was going to bring Palestinian gas that Israelis have stolen, which is offshore in the Mediterranean, and it was going to put that up north and then connect with the Turkish line that was going to, you know, be bringing in from the east, from Azerbaijan.
And then that's the BTC line. Let me explain that real quick, the BTC. So from Azerbaijan to Turkey, there is a gas and an oil pipeline, both BTC, BTC gas, BTC oil. And from Turkey, it goes by water to Israel. And then from southern Israel, it slides through, it bypasses the Suez Canal and goes through a pipeline to the Red Sea. That gives Israel pretty much a monopoly on all the gas and oil going east towards China and India. Now, if it goes the other direction through the Mediterranean, it goes to Italy, which is the number two exporter of oil and gas from the BTC. Israel's number one. The pipeline that Israel built through its south, it did back when it was working with Iran after Operation Ajax, and Israel is getting 90% of its oil from the stolen Sinai Peninsula and Iran at the time. Now they've lost Iran, obviously, but they still have that line. And that's why Turkey and Israel have been working together for so long. William Englehart and I did a nice interview about that, talking about Syria as well, but giving the Turk and Israeli interest. So just explaining BTC. Now that starts at Azerbaijan, but Azerbaijan is really like the Republic of British Petroleum.
Yes, yes. Okay, so, oh, by the way, William Englehart was today in Serbia. I missed him, but he gave a conference today, a lecture in Novi Sad, and yesterday, last night, he was in Belgrade. But anyway,
I'll have to get him back on too.
Good stuff. That would be great. He's great. So
we need to have another, a round table with all of us sometime.
That would be a good
him
project.
And you, me, Pepe, like all the pipeline people, you know.
That would be great. I'd be down for that.
All the time zones together, but
it is. Yeah, we're all
I never know
all
where spread, Pepe
we're like
is.
All over the world. Yeah,
he doesn't either.
But yeah,
I'm in Japan. I'm always in Japan. So, got my weird time zone. But anyway, so these Americans, Israelis, and Turks wanted one line.
They wanted one
Russians
line.
And everyone else wanted another.
Right. And the one line on the south, so the ones that you described, there's like another, the project name firm for the EU and US, to expand those lines that you discussed. It's called the Southern Corridor, right? Mm-hmm. So they wanted it, and then all the lines that you discussed that you named that go from Azerbaijan through Turkey, they wanted to expand also under this Southern Corridor, aka South Stream, excuse me, Nabucco, aka Anatolian pipeline that would then connect through the Balkans across Italy, called the Trans-Adriatic pipeline, so TANAP and TAP, basically to connect to Nabucco and the Southern Corridor, which are all expansion and extension projects of the ones that you
Baku, plus yes. The stolen gas and oil from Palestine.
Exactly, right. And in order to expand it, there are reserves in Egypt on the Mediterranean north coast in Egypt. And then also but the landline, the best point to go through was through Syria. And because you get like geologists and they look at like the stability and the soil and the, you know, and the politics of it and everything. And they have other goals too.
Lack of mountains, things like that.
Yes. And so they wanted to, so basically what happened is that, and this has caused some confusion in sort of people who analyze imperialism, anti-imperialism, because while it's true that that Mubarak was nominally a U.S. ally in most spheres and collaborated with the Israelis on issues like Palestine and tunnels and stuff like that.
Only because the IMF gave him billions of dollars.
Right, exactly. He didn't want to go against Assad, and he wasn't on board with this pipeline expansion project. And primarily,
well, people got to remember Egypt and Syria used to be one country.
That's right. They were one country. That's right.
Briefly, so, but that's how close the relations were, yeah.
Yes, at one point it was that close, and their flags are still similar, it was not that long ago. I mean, you know, most people listening to your show were
alive while it was one country. So
yes. So at any rate, the war that basically happened in Syria and Turkey's involvement, and then how Mubarak was overthrown, and the U.S. installed Morsi, who, you know, his Muslim Brotherhood is connected to the government in Egypt, excuse me, in Turkey, and how they were then going to like work together with Israel and expand this pipeline that was then going to connect through Turkey with the one from Azerbaijan, and then it was going to go through the Balkans. It was going to enter through actually Bulgaria again, and this is going to figure in kind of importantly in a moment. And then it was going to wind through a similar course, of course, though it favored Romania instead of Serbia, but then afterwards it had the same idea. And then
now
what happened
Sisi
is
Sisi in charge, he'll go with it, right?
You know, that's the issue. Hmm. It's not, you know, the thing is, well, see, with Sisi there, basically Morsi was put in to go with this program, but they needed to also overthrow Syria to do it because Iran wanted to get involved with Nabucco, and then they were X'd out of it, and the whole kind of countries that ganged up on Syria also were against Iran, and they decided they were going to take Syria out. But then after, even though Sisi wants to play ball on a number of things, and he wants to play ball on the Nabucco line as well, but not in a way not to overthrow Syria, and not to, so that's the tricky part.
Iran is also tapping into the Pars gas fields, which they share with Qatar.
Yes, and also in the last year, Iran has increased its bilateral trade in general with Turkey by over 400%. So there's been, and this follows on the heels of a few years ago where Iran-Turkey relations were at an all-time low, and now you can, in
but
Tehran... See,
that makes the most sense. Like, lift the sanctions on Iran and just ship the gas from there to Turkey. It'd be done the quickest, the most economically feasible. It makes the most sense, but they just got to be in their bonnet about Iran.
Well,
it's Israel's enemy.
You know, right, that might be the direction that things are going. That's what I've written about. There are some opportunities for what you've just said to actually take place, and that's what really, to like jump forward to this Russian-Turkish gas deal, that might allow Sisi to be involved in a plan that, and they could still use Syria, but Assad's Syria and not America's Syria, and that's a big difference. And so there might be some signs of a realignment in that region, and even Iran might have an opportunity to get back in on this new Turkish-Russian gas line. See, the thing is that basically it's confusing to talk about because there were several different project names, but they involved the same concept, but they might have involved different countries, different routes, and different project companies involved. So when you say Nabucco, you're also, when you're talking about Nabucco, you're also talking about the Southern Corridor. You're also talking about the Trans-Anatolian pipeline as well, and the Shah Deniz 2 expansion project. So these were all related concepts. But when South Stream was announced, and then once Gazprom got forward momentum on it, see, Gazprom had some advantages organizationally on their end because you're only dealing with one party. But the Nabucco project involved like all these different countries, all these different project companies that had overlapping interests, interlocking boards of directors that might have had contradictory projects and interests and things in mind. And the whole thing suffered like funding projects, plus they couldn't overthrow Assad and all these other problems too. So basically what seems to have happened is that the South Stream project now has been merged, at least this is what they're talking about, with the Nabucco project. And that's where, except Bulgaria is being threatened to be axed out of both. And that's kind of where the whole people heard about the news about Bulgaria. And people, how could Bulgaria do this? Because they thought that they were going to be able, that if South Stream didn't go through, that the Tanap Top project, a.k.a. Nabucco, would be one that they could benefit from. And then also the Georgians and the Azeris were working with the Ukrainians to have another Ukrainian line that would then connect to other lines that already go through Ukraine called the White Stream. And since those relied on the same Azeri fields that will now be included in a revived Nabucco project that's been merged with South Stream and involves the Russians, that's probably not going to happen. So Bulgaria and the EU, right, to summarize, we're banking on perhaps frustrating, making it lose-lose for Russia, frustrating South Stream, bringing back the Nabucco project and thinking that they could foil Putin and the Russians. But instead, Putin and Erdogan seem to have made a deal, made an end run around this plan by the Europeans to divide Russian from Turkish interests, and instead they've teamed up to finish the project.
Sweet Jesus. That's a lot of chess playing. I hope some people were looking at a map when you were going over all that.
Right, yeah. If you look at a map, it's real clear. You know, Azerbaijan is there on the Caspian, and that's kind of like in the Caucasus next to Armenia and Georgia, right above Iran. And then everyone knows where Egypt and Syria is, I hope, by now. Because Americans, you know, they know where the wars are.
Yeah, we learn geography through war.
Right. So yeah, that's my basic assessment of the situation, and the thing is that European talk about bringing back Tanap and Top and under the names that you listed as well is kind of a fantasy, because which is also kind of like the White Stream project, because if it's not merging with the Southern Corridor pipelines that we talked about going through the Levant, and if it's not involved in Nabucco, like if it's not going to go through Turkey. See, if it's going to go through the Black Sea from Azerbaijan, it's just not enough gas. Like, the ultimate yield is not worth the investment. And you're just not going to produce enough gas to make it worth laying pipe on your own. Because the project of Nabucco involved Turkish project companies as well as others who are willing to, you know, put the capital forward and pay it down and then, you know, reap the benefits later. So that's why EU seems to be kind of in a state of denial, or maybe they just don't know the math or the politics involved.
Well, I'm wondering too with Ukraine, if once the South Stream is up and running so they can bypass Ukraine, and there's still what, 15 billion euros in debt or whatever.
Yeah.
And they're not, if they don't pay for their gas, could Gazprom turn it off and say, you go ahead and freeze? Because
yeah,
they can't really blackmail them or steal the gas in the black market if they just turn it off and go through the South Stream, which is underwater.
Right. I mean, the only real thing is that because there are some places in north in Poland where the Nord Stream has connections that could be built, and then or they could reverse flow, but Russia has threatened that. That's basically stealing gas that they're selling, right? So this whole concept of reverse flow, getting Nord Stream gas or getting gas back from the fingers of the Ukrainian line, Soyuz line or Borat line, are not going to work. So, you know, yeah, Ukraine going to be SOL. But I don't think that, I don't think, honestly, Rai, that the Russians want to make Ukrainians suffer as a whole, or because it's going to be like pensioners and stuff freezing to death. Because the politics of that, you know, I think the Russians want to play a card that makes them look like they're going to come to the rescue and save the situation. And it all depends on the information war. Like, if they can get the meme to really go that the Ukrainian government is going to be responsible for the gas getting shut off, then maybe it could happen. But if they can, but that's hard to manage. I think the Russians want to.
I mean, they can put pressure on Gazprom, but Gazprom's a private company. It isn't Russia. And they're not going to give them gas if they're not getting money.
Yeah, I mean that's the deal. Gazprom can, you know, Gazprom will probably line up with Russian geostrategic interests. That's what it looks like happened. So, it seems to me that, you know, definitely what you're saying is on point. They use the threat. You know, using the threat is important. I don't want to disseminate the meme that they're not
turned it off for a little while back in what 2005. When was that dioxide poisoning?
Blunt. Yes,
they didn't That's pay, right. and they turned it off for a little while, and they turned it back on. So
yeah, and in 2010, also the Ukrainians played a game with not giving. They didn't pay for their share, and then so the amount of gas was reduced, and then they withheld it from European countries, and all over different parts of Europe reported brownouts and shortages.
Man, it could get so nasty this winter. Winter is coming.
Yes, it's going to be a cold one too. I mean, it's already snowing in Kiev, and there's just been a media silence. NATO has moved in a full information lockdown on news from Kiev, and you can only really follow a few anonymous bloggers from Kiev. They're not pro-Russian or anything. I mean, they might have even been Maidan supporters in their early stages, but now they're freezing to death, and they're writing about it. But you're never going to see it like in mainstream Ukraine. They're like pretending that this has not happened. It's like when
a friend yesterday, we got caught off of Skype because it lost power because somebody's been messing with the power plants.
Yeah, I mean, power shortages, energy problems are just going to be part of the Ukrainian situation as it continues to devolve. So it's... you know, the problem is that if Russia does something to, like, fix the situation, the Western media is going to try to create some pretext with the UN or imagine the UN and then move in and expand the war and get even worse. You know, it's the only real thing it looks like can happen is that if Russia can win this information war and turn European public opinion and enough of the European businesses, you know, in line with this and getting the South Stream project back on board by rebranding it and not having it go through Bulgaria is probably going to be a big piece of this.
Pretty good move. I just hope they get them built. The more pipelines, the better. I mean, people need gas and oil, and you know, it just makes me sad. They're willing to, you just connected that whole thing to Syria too, like their vested interests in trying to topple a leader because he didn't want to go with their brand or whatever. It's so disgusting.
It is disgusting. I mean, it's what they try to line up basically these different consortiums and these projects. They try to line them up a certain way. I mean, it's politics too. I mean, you know, foreseeably there was another way to route the pipelines instead of going through Syria, but basically they try to line up as many different interest to be vested against these long-term geostrategic opponents, and then they make it look like those are the reasons. But you see, what happens is, you know, like in corporate culture, is that you'll have like a shareholders meeting, and then like one basically junta of shareholders is bent on selling all the shareholders a certain project or direction of taking the company. So they'll hire an outside company to do some kind of phony study that makes it look like this is the only way it can happen. So what they did is they made it look like, I mean, there's truth to it. I mean, Syria is probably the best place, but there's alternatives too. But they basically just painted the whole thing to make it look like if we can't topple Assad, then the project can't go forward. And that's what they got everyone behind. And they, you know, shareholders meetings and all of all the project companies. And so they all decided to go forward. And then what happened is,
well, Assad had signed on to that $10 billion line from Iran through Iraq to Syria, which is a lot shorter. And I mean, immediately once the U.S. was out of Iraq, the three of them were ready to go on that.
Yep.
And then suddenly there was sniper fire in Syria and a big civil war got going.
That's right. And that was in beginning of 2011, I think, right?
Yeah, the U.S. was out of there December 2010.
Out of Iraq, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and so the whole thing basically unwound like that, and then Obama decides to recommit. They create this ISIS thing and then try to reinvade Iraq and Syria with this mercenary ISIS army. And then the rest, as they say, is history.
There's really no difference between ISIS and the FSA.
No, it's the same thing.
It's the same group.
It's the same people.
Yep. And the FSA got its money and its guns from the U.S. and the GCC allies. And everybody knows that.
Yeah, what I was going to say, what's your sense? Does everyone get that now? Like, does everyone understand that this is just that there's all this talk about the U.S. bombing ISIS is just smoke and mirrors?
I don't know. I think they don't really believe TV anymore, but they don't know what's going on. It's just some people, they just saw those beheading so-called videos or whatever and said, oh, F them, let's get them or whatever. But mainly they just think the Middle East is full of crazy people and always fighting. Just it's an inevitable consequence of it being the Middle East and couldn't possibly be because of outside sources or anything. But I think, yeah, they just saw it as like a waste of money. You know, oh, we're going to go bomb ISIS now. You got someone else to bomb. Yippee. And they're talking about staying there for years. It's ISIS. They don't have any anti-air. They don't have any real big weapons or anything. We've seen them with convoys full of trucks and things. You could wipe them out in a day, but that's not really the goal.
I mean, think about all the tax dollars that get sucked up by the military-industrial complex to wage these wars that don't benefit anyone except for a few, you know, crony capitalists and super elite. Think about all those tax dollars. If they would have stayed in people's pockets, people could have invested them any kind of way. Think of all these like workers, small, medium-sized businesses, even some big businesses aren't part of this either. I mean, there's a lot of different big businesses that aren't involved in the military-industrial complex. I don't mean mega companies, but relatively big businesses. And they could have been building, you know, schools, or they could have had their, or they could
island
have been
where I live on right now has the ocean coming over the road. They could have spent it on beach nourishment. There's just the whole coastline.
There's just a million. Yeah. I mean, there's just a million projects that could have been financed.
They could have repaired the levees in New Orleans and Katrina would never have happened.
Yeah. But then there wouldn't have been those wonderful, investment opportunities. Right. And all of the, you know.
Well, that's what happened on our island, too. Freaking Mark Bassnight hired his own company for repairs and construction. So he actively fought against beach nourishment. And when I was in Louisiana, I went on this swamp boat tour looking at crocodiles or gators, whichever one is there, I forgot. And the two guys in the boat, they had like a little baby crocodile, alligator, whatever it was, and they were passing around, let people touch it and stuff, and they just started telling the story about how bad the levees were and how bad the local government was, and if there was ever a storm or anything and they were going to break and was going to flood New Orleans. How about that's a pretty extreme claim, but a few months later was Katrina. I was in Japan.
Well, they knew
it flooded.
The studies, they knew if there was like, I forget the numbers, but if it was anything above a Category 4 hurricane or something or whatever, it was going to destroy the thing. And they were supposed to.
Cat 1 even. I mean, they usually don't get hit with hurricanes. But, I mean, it's a very old city. It hasn't been flooded many times. But it was flooded not because of the hurricane rain or whatever. It's because the levees broke. The levees broke because they've been sending all their construction and equipment to Iraq.
Mm, mm. Oh, cost listen, a lot more to send it
to
point.
Iraq. So that business gets more money because it's government money. They don't care.
That's
but
nuts.
They just got all the whole news is just about how Bush didn't respond fast enough, or FEMA camps, or looting, whatever. And they didn't talk about what caused the whole thing to begin with the levees and the corruption. Very little news was on any of that. But the locals there knew. You know how desperate you have to be when you're just telling tourists on a swamp boat tour, like anybody who will listen, like how bad your situation is?
Right. You can't. You don't get heard.
Mm-mm. Well, I wrote about it, but then, you know, my site was itty bitty back then. Oh, well. Sorry, guys.
Sorry. My best. Yep.
But yeah, you're right. If we look at all these trillions of dollars wasted on this BS overseas, implementing Israel's foreign policy, there's no telling. But I mean, people always say, what if we spent the money on the military on, you know, X, Y, and Z, clean water for the whole world? Or it's an enormous amount of wealth. And people are wondering where the money is, and they can't get a job and they can't get hired because the employer doesn't have the money to pay you, even if they have work. And there are laborers, and you have the skills, you have the people, and work needs to be done. If that money isn't there to pay the people to do it, it's not going to be done.
Not going to be done. It's
and
not
money,
gonna be done.
The money supply is all been spent. It's been concentrated into the freaking Lockheed Martin, Boeing, and all these giant mega corporations and financial institutions who just robbed you. And that's another reason not to support the war, where they understand. I remember people talking about Ron Paul and saying, these are morons I'm talking about, saying, well, I like his economics, but I don't like his foreign policy. I'm like, you're an idiot. You can't separate foreign policy from economics.
Yeah. It's like saying, I like to add 1 + 1, but I don't like that the answer is 2.
Yeah, I mean, how can you just ignore $1 trillion expenditure and act like, well,
yeah,
that one's
the other half of that equation. It's the other half of that equation. It just doesn't make any sense. But yeah, well, with these gas pipelines, basically Europe shot itself in the foot. I mean, Europe's going to be okay and everything, but it's like, because the gas is still going to come, and, you know, it's just going to be a different project. They were really hoping to have a project that X'd out Russia, and they didn't expect that Turkey was going to make an end run with Russia around that. Europe thought basically they could keep playing Turkey and Russia against each other, whether it was in Syria or on gas pipelines, and, you know, they guessed wrong.
Yeah, I guess Russia made Turkey a better offer.
Yeah, I think, you know, the thing is that it's like the
it's
EU.
It's a lot of gas.
It's a lot of gas. And the thing is like, you know, Turkey has its own currency, but they're part of European, they're part of European trade. They're part of the broader network of the European Union, but they're not a Eurozone country. And the thing is, they're also a NATO partner. And, you know, Turkey is like, it's like they're in the middle of they're the farthest east NATO country. They're not really a European country, unless you're like a medievalist who considers Anatolia part of like the Hellenic world or something, but they're not really a European country. And, so, you know, it's like being right. It's like, okay, Turkey, you're there on the front line. Keep it up. Good work. You know, I mean, if there's like some problem with NATO and the Middle East and Iran and Russia, I mean, Turkey's like up in smoke. Like they're on the front lines. They're, you know, and it's like, why would they be in that situation? The euro is not performing well. The euro dollar is like not doing good. And the European economy is not doing good. They don't really have a good plan. They're carrying all the toxic debt from those repackaged, you know, toxic bonds, toxic waste that was repackaged somehow as AAA bonds and sold to Europe in 2008.
Yeah.
And
AAA rated CDOs.
You know, what's up with that? So now it's like Turkey's like, oh, we don't need a piece of that. You know, thing is that in 2012, the Russians told Greece, hey, you know what, if you back out of the euro, or if you just renege on that debt, we will rebuild your economy. And the Russians were pledging to begin with over $5 billion, and then 10 and 15. The Chinese were going to come in and just buy off the just like they offered in before the coup in Ukraine in December. The Chinese offered firmly to pay down the $12 or $15 billion debt that Ukraine had. And in 3 years before that, the same thing happened with Greece. And, you know, if the leadership in these countries...
I'll make a prediction right now. I think next year probably... Well, this is in Africa, but I think Zambia is going to get its loans from China because the president died and Guy Scott took over in October, and he's totally anti-IMF, and he's going to have to get them from China because they're still in debt and they got to have a kind of something to start up with. And I think things will turn around there. China will finally get another foothold in Africa. But as far as Ukraine goes... as far as China goes, too, I think just directly from Russia to China, they're doing a line, too, right, in the east. That'll be something.
Yeah.
Xi Jinping said yes
from
to that.
From Russia to China, well, there's going to – they have a – basically, see, the thing is that there's two major deals in the last, like, 4 or 5 months that Russia and China have agreed to, and there's a number of $400 billion that's been floating around, which is, you know, about half a trillion. And the thing is that they have had two deals actually on that figure. So it's actually closer to like $1 trillion or 600 billion euros.
See what you can spend money on when you don't waste it on war?
You know, yeah, these countries have just a fraction of the U.S. military budget. I don't know where, honestly, right, all those American military dollars go, if it's like black ops or just going into people's pockets, selling those $14 screws and bolts and $100 toilet seats. I don't know what. But somehow Russia and China are able to protect their countries and have a strong regional hegemony in their spheres of influence at a fraction of the cost. I don't know how they do it, right?
Well, I mean, it's spending more on the military doesn't make it stronger, just more expensive.
Right.
It's basically the same toys. Well, actually, our aircraft don't even work. We do build good ships still, but...
Are you telling me the F-35 isn't the most kick-ass plane you've ever seen?
Oh, the one that was jointly built with Israel? No. The one that pilots are passing out on and they're crashing in Florida and North Carolina with those things?
Is it like liquefied oxygen or something? And then,
It used to be liquefied oxygen. No, they're passing it through the frickin'. They have this stupid sleeve. It's coming right out of the frickin' exhaust, basically, and like it's getting cleansed and then changed in the air. It's the most convoluted and stupid thing I've ever heard of.
So they have the guys breathing exhaust.
Well, supposedly the sleeve changes it.
Dina
Razor has done a good write up on that. Just look up F-22 or 35 oxygen intake and you can see how stupid it is.
And then the gas for the F-35 can't go above 25 Celsius or doesn't
work. Worse than that. Yeah. It doesn't even have a landing hook for the aircraft carriers. So
yeah, it's not compatible, right?
No,
yeah,
it can't even land on them.
So
wow.
What?
And the what stealth goop they're putting on the outside of both
scam?
Of those is passing
just
people out.
Basically?
They don't care. I mean, they built it's like the Bradley fighting vehicle. They don't build these things for combat. They build them with every bell and whistle possible, with a part made in each state just to pass the pork around for the sake of building it. It's a $500 million aircraft, $488 million, and they just want to make the most expensive thing they can. Because the government will buy them, and so will other governments. They're not really going to use them.
Why don't they make like expensive trains or expensive roads that waste money but at least build infrastructure?
Hey, you know, well, they do build expensive roads, but as far as trains go, I don't know, because the trains can't kill anybody.
Yeah, right. But
you can't sell them abroad because they got to be
anyone either.
They got to be attached to your tracks, I guess. I don't know. We have some awesome trains here in Japan. Because Japan's been at peace since World War II, so we've got levitating trains that sit on magnets and go, you know, they've had bullet trains here forever.
Yeah, but you know what, right? All those people in Japan, if it wasn't for America, they'd be speaking Japanese. If it wasn't for America, wait.
They wouldn't have had to rebuild all those cities.
But anyway, man, so that's basically the lowdown on the kind of...
Wasn't for America, there'd still be one Korea. Oh, wait. Oh, shit. It's so sad. I mean, Japan annexed all of Korea from about 1905 till the end of World War II, but then the U.S. went and invaded it themselves. Disgusting.
I mean, didn't the U.S. basically cut off oil to Japan at the end of the 30s?
Yeah, well, they had the McCollum memo, and that was part of this 8-point plan, and the oil embargo is what caused Pearl Harbor. I mean, Japan was in the middle of a war with China. They had to have the oil. It was cut off, so.
And the Japanese had an occupation of Manchuria at the time, or?
Right. Yeah, they did. I mean, that is not like China had never done anything to Japan either. That was an old, long-standing back-and-forth conflict, but they had, Japan had taken taken Korea already during the 1905 war with Russia over Port Arthur, and then they had taken Manchuria, and they were marching towards British India. So, it's odd. Right. I mean, it could have gone the other way. If the U.S. had allied with Japan, they would have wiped out the communist Chinese and never had a Soviet Union, but whatever. There were no good guys in World War II. It was all a bunch of governments using poor people to kill each other.
That's the nature of war in general.
Yeah, send the poor.
Yep.
Give them a nice speech. Hand them a gun. Tell them they're a coward if they don't fight for you. Send them in. Tell them they're a hero.
That's all. The people who survive get little shiny medals and stuff.
Get little ribbons now. Not even a medal.
Not even metal.
If you die, your family might get one. I don't know. It's disgusting. It's total brainwashing. Don't join the military. You know, not the U.S. military. You're not fighting for freedom. You're fighting to expand corporate interests. Unless you just need a job that bad. Like, I don't see any reason to join armed services. You're not servicing. I mean, I believe that, but look what we've done since Vietnam to now. We're not defending people. We're not spreading democracy. We're not protecting the United States. We're actually engaged in acts of terrorism, which causes terrorism as a backlash and trillions of dollars and slaughtering millions of people all over the world. And that's not an exaggeration. Millions. Shit, Vietnam alone was millions. It doesn't even include the Iraq War, Afghanistan, all the wars in between. It's disgusting. We need to get out of Ukraine. We need to get out of Syria. We need to definitely get out of Iraq. And we need to get out of Afghanistan. And speaking of pipelines, conflict in Afghanistan 14 years now, soon. That prevents pipelines from going to China. You know, and who cares if China gets oil? It's good for Chinese people. It's good for people. It's good for humans. You know, they have a higher standard of living. It's okay to spread the wealth around. You're not going to see it anyway. You aren't losing a dime. You know, you're not an oil company or anything. Like,
right.
It's better for all of us, but, you know, if China rises up, they wouldn't be the manufacturing hub from the raw resources we steal from Africa, and then just so they could sell iPhones to rich kids in California or whatever, who knows. It's just disgusting.
Yeah. I mean, this whole age just is not sustainable. The whole thing has got to be completely reworked or come to an end. It's just this, there was a guy in the 50s wrote a book, Planned Obsolescence. Just,
yeah.
They used parts. They could have always used higher quality parts. They were already proven that there were higher quality metal parts that were cheaper to produce than lower quality plastic parts. Like those little gears and stuff inside of VCRs that are made out of plastic, and then they wear down and then the thing broke. All that stuff has been going on since post-World War II.
Little prints and printers, you know, to make it, oh, it's broken and I don't understand technology. I mean, just buy a new printer.
Yep.
It's planned obsolescence.
Yeah. I mean, the whole system of, like, people having to go to work every day, go work in a factory to assemble things, basically to make things all over again that have already been made. I mean, think about how many cars have already been made. I mean, everyone in the world could have a car. I'm not saying it's the most, like, you know, ecological friendly thing, but I'm just saying conceptually, in terms of the idea of things being made already, there's so many things that just keep getting remade and remade and just produce so much waste. It's just a waste of human lives, human effort, natural resources. The whole system is wasteful.
Yeah, when something lasts, you can pass it on to your children, grandchildren, and so on. That's why they have 30-some-year loans on houses. It's like one generation, and then, wow, that's gone. Too old, can't resell that, da-da-da. Well, yeah, planned obsolescence. But some things are made to last. Actually, the older cars were made to last and did last for a long time. It's the newer ones that break so fast.
That I had a 1941 Plymouth and a 1951 DeSoto. They were both on their second rebuilds. They ran pretty well. I didn't drive them much. I sold them before I moved to Serbia, but they were amazing cars. It was they were all original. I just replaced fuel pumps, you know, worked on them myself, had buddies come over, have a few beers and work on them. We had a car club. Those cars were built to last. I don't know.
But I tell you, it's unrelated to pipelines or anything, but people need to be more self-sufficient. Like, learn how to fix some things yourself, learn how to grow some stuff yourself, and make things last instead of constantly buying new things. Repair your stuff. It usually isn't that hard to do.
In Los Angeles, in the back in the day, anarchists used to give like public information classes. They would have them, these like little forms in parks, and they would do these DIY classes. This is before the internet. Now you can go on YouTube. You can go on YouTube and find anything, how to repair or make anything by yourself. So many things you don't need to buy. And, you know, it's, I know it's not the most PC thing to say, but even on, I'm not saying it's not money, right? But if you're making, you know, 12 grand a year, and you're living somewhere where rents are not more than $600 or $700, and with the rest of that, if you don't have a crazy cell phone bill or a stupid cable TV bill, there's a lot of stuff you can DIY. There's a lot of stuff you can DIY.
Yep. Yeah, get by, folks. Well, thanks for your 2 cents on the pipelines, and we'll see what's going on with South Stream, and I'll see if I can get William and those other guys, and we can do a little convention. It'll be hard, but it'll be really fun.
It would be.
Yeah.
Hey, well, thanks for having me on your show, Rye, and glad I was able to talk about it. And I have an article up about what we just talked about. It's gone around. It's on the Greenville Post. It's on Cyrano's Journal.
Oh, what's the title?
It's called, it is called, basically, it is about what we talked about, and it's called Russia and Turkey's Gas Deal Can Save Europe and the World. Russia and Turkey's gas deal can save Europe and the world. And I get into a lot more detail, stuff that you talked about, stuff that I talked about. It's all there.
Yeah, because I think that might need a read through next to some maps or something. So,
yeah, I've got a bunch of maps there, and you can see the maps and the pipelines and the different plans. And, you know, it's not a polemic, and I don't get excited. I just say this is this and this is that.
Understanding this stuff with pipelines makes everything so clear, and you can predict stuff way in the future. Oh, that, yep. Yep, makes sense, you know. Mm-hmm. There's all this other talk about nonsense, you know. And it's like each single war has got a different reason or whatever. Like, no, man, this has been it the whole time.
Yep.
All these conflicts make sense when you understand the pipeline wars in that area anyway.
Yeah, that's what's going on.
All right, well, Google up that article, folks. And I'll catch you again later.
All right, I'll see you. All right, take care. Peace.